In a few moments, we're going to be reading our scripture. We're going to read it together, and it's in your insert. It's on the back cover of your insert, and it's titled The First Four Commandments. And, you know, for some of you, I think probably as soon as you hear the word, you know, the commandments, you got to be thinking, oh my gosh, you know, it's just, right? The exciting commandments. You know, and you go, I know them. There's nothing new there. But I will promise you that there is something new and interesting. And as we'll find this morning, these first four commandments are absolutely wonderful because they really end up helping us set the stage for how to design our life, you know, so that we can be the happiest, so that we can be the most fulfilled that we can possibly be. And which is good. George Bernard Shaw, kind of along these lines, he said, better keep yourself clean and bright because you are the window through which you see the world. Right? So with this little background, let's read these first four commandments together from the book of Exodus. Okay. And God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above, or on earth beneath, or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son nor daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Right. And may God bless our hearing, our reading, our embodiment of this really beautiful word of abundant life. Amen. A lot of people, I talk to a lot of people, obviously, about life, and one of the questions that comes up just repeatedly, and it's presented in many different ways, but essentially it's, what can I do to feel better, right? What can I do? Is there anything that I can do? Is there any kind of thing that I can practice that'll help me live better and be happier, be stronger, be able to deal with all the stuff that life throws at you? And fortunately, the answer is yes, right? That you actually can set the table for your day and for your life in a way that creates a strong and happy and healthy life. And not only that, but not only can you do this, but you're actually the only one in the universe who can do this for you. Nobody else can do it for you. That's not news to any of you. But this is what our faith is about, and this is what it helps you do. This is really what's part of the essence of these commandments that we're reading and hearing. What you notice that you may not notice the first time you look at it or the 100th time you look at it is they're actually 100% proactive, right? They embrace our responsibility. They embrace our part and what we should be doing, what our posture can be. And if you look at faith as a whole, there is absolutely nothing, 0%, nada, in our faith that is about blame or that is about being a victim. It's not there. But there are 1,000 different ways that our faith says, as do the commandments. It says in so many words, look, this is your life, right? And you have choices. You have the power. You get to direct the tone and the shape and the posture and the focus of your life, and doing so, embracing and accepting that simple fact over and over and over again of choosing, instantaneously creates a transformation and transforms you from victim into, which is just really reacting passively to what life throws at you, even if you react well, but it transforms you into putting you into the driver's seat. Because faith says, you choose, even with God. And that's the way it begins. We choose God, or we choose not God. Or we choose, you know, kind of maybe lukewarm relationship with God. We choose love. We choose not love. We choose lukewarm relationship with love. You set the table. You set your mind. You set your posture. You set your will. You set your faith. And you do this for your day, and you do this for your life. And then you reset and you reframe and you do this again and again and again, and this is how it goes. And we start with these commandments that we read, and you notice kind of the emotional posture of these things, which is, it's about putting your stake in the ground and saying, this is what I do and this is who I am, and committing to that with faith, not I like this or whatever. And this is actually the key that a lot of people miss. A lot of people don't understand where life-changing power of faith comes in, and not really understanding the difference between kind of exploring faith, or faith is kind of a nice thing to have, and the essence of commitment. That's the thing that gives it the power. Faith is not taking the posture of, I like it. It's nice, I agree with it. It's good. I wish I could do that, you know. I think this would be good for people in general. Power comes from the commitment, which is, I'm going to do this. I'm going to. Period. This is going to be my orientation. Right? This is what my life is going to be, even from this moment, right now. So the how-to part of this is you wake up in the morning and you set intentionally your mind and your soul. And you do so by asking questions of yourself. Whether you do this intentionally or whether this is part of what you read to set your table, or you know, whatever practice you have or whatever, the questions essentially that are being kind of dealing with yourself are, you know, what is my unshakable posture going to be for this day, regardless of circumstance? It's going to be, you know, what do I respect? Who do I respect? What do I value? You know, for what and whom do I have reverence? Which is a bit of a missing concept in our culture right now. And all this is wrapped up in the first commandment of have no other gods before me. Right? Essentially, that's what this is about. It's about being clear about what you worship and about what you value, and about worshiping some things and valuing some things and not accidentally even worshiping other things. So first commandment, set the table. You say, this is what I stick with. Little example. So this came up last night. So we had a wedding last night. And I was talking to a guy, the brother of the bride, we've known him for 24 years, and we've known Sarah for 24 years, and her brother Marty, and so I've known Marty since he was 7 years old, and he grew up in the church, and we know the Kaisers, and we were talking, and he's a nice kid, he is a nice kid, he was a fun kid. Oh my gosh, he was mischievous kid, right? And he was beyond mischievous sometimes. You know, we're talking, you know, smoking in the parking lot when he's like, I don't know, in middle school or something. You know, the guys are smoking their cigars. And, oh my God, you know. The interesting thing is he never really applied himself, kind of pretty much to anything. He'd goof around. And he went to a regional college down south. And it was interesting. One day in his freshman year, first semester, I got a thick letter in the mail. And it was, and we were talking about this, and it was a four-page, double-sided, handwritten letter from him where he was putting some things down in writing. And he was, and he laid out kind of his screwing around nature. And he also laid out some things that he decided. Not some things that he wanted to do. Some things that he decided not to do anymore, and some things that he decided to do. And some of the things that he decided to do was he wanted to start studying and wanted to be, you know, what he considered in his mind, which is are the similar things that we consider, but, you know, a successful person and happy and stop kind of the screwing around and wasting his life. Now, I hear a lot of these things like this, you know, people say, but actually it's different because most people say, I want to do these things. It would be great to do these things. I'd like to do these things. Very few people come in and say, I have decided, right? And I tell you, most people, I spend hours with people most often telling me why they can't do this, why it's impossible, why that'll never work. You know, they have this whole history and the energy is going a certain way, and it's like, well, I'd like to, but I know that I can't, and I've tried it, and I've tried this, and I can't do this, and I can't do that. That's usually the way that it goes down. But you know what? It was 13 years ago, and he did it. At that moment, he did it, and he never turned back, and it stuck. And from that point on, he actually started getting, you know, 4 O's. He changed his life around. He's got a wonderful, you know, wonderful life that he wanted, that he designed, that's successful to him. And not that it's bad. I mean, but he's got his friends that he was messing around with, and they're literally mowing lawns now, which is fine. It's absolutely fine if that's your design. But it stuck. We were talking about this last night, and I said, you know, Marty, I said that was a powerful letter, and I've shared that with a number of people. And he goes, I remember that vividly, you know, sitting down and writing that. And he said, you know, I don't know why I wrote it to you. He said, you know, I guess I thought, you know, maybe if I wrote it to my minister, then I couldn't like back out of it or something, right? Which is great. Well, obviously something worked, but what he was doing was, he exercised his faith. He set the table for his life. He chose. So our first commandment is set the table, right? You choose. Secondly, it reminds us, you know, choose carefully what you worship, what you idolize. What do I hold as sacred, you know, in life? Do I hold as sacred my wants, you know? My ideas, my opinions, my past. A lot of people hold that as sacred. You know, the way I've done things for 39 years. This is the way I've done things for 39 years, by God. You know, I can't change that now. You know, I've got a hot temper. That's just the way I am. Right? My agenda, my physical comfort, my need, assets, you know, are they what I worship, what I idolize, my job, my physical health, you know? What do I value the most? Winning arguments, some people do. You know, being right, as I've said, sometimes being right more than being in relationship. So, question is, choose carefully what you worship. You shall have no other gods before me. So I'm going to, may seem like I'm diverting here, but stick with me. You'll get this, okay? And that is that we invest, like we literally invest in most heavily in those things that we consider of ultimate importance, right? And there's an interesting phrase that a lot of people say, which is, if you've got your health, what? How does that end? You got everything. Everything. right? Now, the interesting thing is that that actually bears out statistically. If you've got your health, you've got everything. What we don't realize is that that's actually making a faith claim. That's putting a stake in the ground of my health is my ultimate value. The statistics that bear that out are that financially, you know, healthcare is one of our largest expenses that we make in life, our largest investments. And people spend more on healthcare, you know, making their bodies last that last year than just about anything in their lives, often. Right? Including they spend more in the last year, many times, than sometimes they do in a home. Sometimes then more than they spend on helping others. Sometimes more than they spend on helping their own children. You know, I wish I could help, but you know, paying $300,000 a year for, you know, for my health care, and the money's going to run out soon. 80% of all health care costs spent in that last year of the person's life can rack up hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so it's an interesting ethical question, and it's a faith question, and it's an example of what do we value the most and what impact does that have? What does that say about what we believe is most important? Is that really what we want to be doing with hundreds of thousands of dollars, sometimes into the millions, where I've seen people spend literally their entire life savings on the last year, maybe 2 years of their lives. People who scrimp and save, deny themselves, don't go on trips, don't share as freely as they want to because of this. Now, I get it with vibrancy of life. You know, going out there, you know, you're young, living, so forth, you want to maintain fabulous. But existing is not our faith. You know, our faith would say things like, you know, if you've got your soul, a healthy soul, if you've got on here, that's everything, if you've got that. Right? If you make a meaningful difference, that's everything. When you love, when you have improved life, when you've had, you know, maybe it's children, maybe it's other people's lives, you've got everything, not hanging on. Our faith would say, you know, don't invest in that which is sooner or later going to go, because the other statistic is that 100% of the time it goes. And if that's what you've just blown it all on, I don't know what that says. What do you worship? What is your God? Longevity, success, job security, your kids' academic success, you know, your kids' sports success, your kids' social success. I do know of somebody who, the most important thing, mom in town, for the kid to be really popular. Pretty much anything bent for that kid to be popular. And I probably don't need to tell you that it's a disaster scenario, right? So we talked about, you know, the end of life. I just want to talk for a moment about children, right? And because odd as it is, our children can be our God. We can actually put our children before God. We can put their wants, their desires, you know, wanting to free them from suffering, from pain. And, you know, if life revolves around their happiness, their wants and needs, and so forth, if their self becomes center, right, how does that orient them in the future of their life in terms of what they believe is most important? Their wants and their needs? And we look around these days and we go, you know, do we see that as an issue today anywhere? Right? Does that create issues in marriage? When that is your center? Does that create issues in society? You know, when you put a whole bunch of people together like that in terms of what's most important. Who and what do we put first? You know, that sets a different table than what our commandments are talking about. So second to last illustration. On the other end of the spectrum is low self-esteem. And you go, how do you worship low self-esteem? And every one of us in this room, I guarantee, knows at least one person and probably at least a half a dozen people whose low self-esteem is actually their God. People, my God, people who are faithful to their low self-esteem, people who repeat the litanies of low self-esteem. I can't do that. I've never been able to do that and so forth. And by God, if you try to get in between them and their low self-esteem, do you ever have success? Never. People commit to that and worship it as if it were sacred. On the other end of the spectrum, let's talk about selfies, right? Right? Literally seeing the world revolve around you. Right? Literally seeing the world revolve around you, your activities, your feelings, current mood, right? Highs and lows, right? This is, that sets the table in a certain way for your life. Have no other gods before me. Get the priorities right in terms of healthy. So how do we reorient in a healthy way? So an interesting thing happened, I think it was Thursday, Friday morning to me, that I woke up and there were things going through my mind, right? Things going through my mind on this day was, Christ before me, Christ beside me, Christ within me. And I was like, and they were just kind of happening on their own. And I was like, I like that. That was kind of a nice way to wake up. And then, do all the good you can by all the means you can and all the ways you can, as long as you ever can. It's like, I like that. Why is that running through my mind? I hadn't written this yet for the bulletin. And I thought, I've read these things so many times that they've just become automatic pilot. They've embedded in me. They've become a part of me. And it's kind of like, putting gas into your car, again and again. You put gas in, it runs dry. You put gas in again, it runs dry. You just keep putting that gas in, and and they become forever in your mind and soul, and it sets a pattern. Right? That might not be the pattern that you like. I happen to like it. You might prefer something else, but I realize that, I would rather wake up to that automatic playing in my mind than so many other things that are a possibility, including, the CNN, whatever news source, worst things that have happened around the world. That too is a litany and a religious practice. So I want to give you a few things today to start your day, to set the table in a way that you might like, and to be able to set your table, choosing God, choosing this health. So we have the breastplate from St. Patrick, those words that we read in unison. And interesting to note, right, that breastplate, that's where he kept it for a good reason, right? So even a saint reminds themselves over and over again. The second thing is actually from a saint too, from St. Teresa. John Wesley, who started the Methodist Church, he wrote it, but St. Teresa has that as her credo that she put on her wall. Why? Because as a saint, that's what she wants. That's how she wanted to set the table for her life, really, again and again. And then we have a reading that we're all going to close with. It's When God Whispers Your Name. And I think that's on the inside cover, right? The inside of it. And I shared this at a deacon's retreat, I think a couple of years ago, and they said, share it with the congregation. And so here we are. And it's a beautiful way, I think, to set the table for your life, choosing faith. And as we do so, we're going to read it together. And doing so, I would say, it's take it on as a spiritual practice, not reading the words, I choose love, I choose patience, so forth. But we actually, let them embed, right? And so we're not going to try to blow through it as fast as we can to get to the end, but to let it sink in and actually experience and allow ourselves to feel it, okay? So. So when God whispers your name, it's quiet, it's early, my coffee is hot, the sky is still black, The world is still asleep. A new day is coming. In a few moments, the day will arrive. It will roar down the track with the rising of the sun. The stillness of the dawn will be exchanged for the noise of the day. The calm of solitude will be replaced by the pounding pace of the human race. The refuge of the early morning will be invading my decisions to be made and deadlines to be met. For the next 12 hours, I will be exposed to the day's demands. It is now that I must make a choice. Because of the choices that Christ made, I know that I too am free to choose. And so I choose. I choose love. No occasion justifies hatred. No injustice warrants bitterness. I choose love. Today I will love God, and I will love whom and what God loves. I choose joy. I will invite my God to be the God of circumstance. I will refuse the temptation to be cynical, the tool of the lazy thinker. I will refuse to see people as anything less human beings created by God. I will refuse to see any problems or anything as less than an opportunity to see God. I choose peace. I will be forgiven. I will forgive so that I may live freely and openly. I choose patience. I will overlook the inconveniences of the world. Instead of cursing the one who will take my place, I will invite him to do so. Rather than complain that the wait is too long, I will thank God for a moment to pray. Instead of eliminating my fist and new assignments, I will face them with joy and courage. I choose kindness. I will be kind to the poor, for they are alone. I will be kind to the rich, for they too know fear and loneliness. And I will be kind to the unkind, for such is how God treated me. I choose goodness. It will go without a dollar before I take a dishonest one. I will be overlooked before I will boast. I will confess before I will accuse. I choose faithfulness. Today I will keep my promises. My associates will not question my word. My spouse will not question my love. And my children will never fear for their parent coming home. I choose gentleness. Nothing is won by force. I choose to be gentle. If I raise my voice, may it be only in praise. If I clench my fist, may it only be in prayer. If I make a demand, may it only be of myself. I choose self-control. I am a spiritual being. After this body is dead, my spirit will soar. I refuse to let what will rot rule the eternal. I choose self-control. I will be drunk only by joy. I will be impassioned only by my faith. I will be influenced only by God and by what is good. I choose self-control. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. To these I commit my day. If I succeed, I will give thanks. If I fail, I will seek God's grace, forgiveness, encouragement, and a new opportunity tomorrow. And then, when this day is done, I will place my head on my pillow and rest. Simply, may we choose, may we set our tables in faith, and may we cultivate our mind, our heart, and our soul. Amen.